if we can all get into our seats, we're going to begin the strategic planning session that's before us, and you will see at your place materials to begin us for this morning. Good morning. This is a special committee meeting that we are going to use as really kicking off what has been a process that we have, as a board, have wanted to place ourselves in, is a strategic planning. And as we start this process, I think it is really important that we capitalize some of the activities that have gone on and that bring us to this, but also will help inform us as we go forward. I would like to start by simply thanking the board, because I think we have done an extremely great deal of work giving the changes and transitions that have come forward. And I think the work that has been done really puts us well positioned in putting us in our house in order, and the board seen as a board that is strongly committed to governance, that's strongly committed to working at a policy level, and there have been many actions that we've had that have brought us to this. We in the bringing on a great deal of new members, have had an opportunity to go through orientation periods. And I think what the orientation periods have done is they've given us that opportunity to not only understand the organization and the role that we will play, but also get to know each other, get to work with each other, and as new members have come on, hopefully knit this board in a way that we can do the work that's important for the board. I think we have, in that process, and working as a board, worked on focusing what the role of the board should be and what the role of the general manager and the senior level should be as we are going to operate on this board. And I think the work that was done under the governance committee by Ms. Hines, adopting the bylaws as a framework of guiding what this board's responsibilities are, and enhancing our procedures and adopting code of conduct, really put in place instruments that would give us, as a board, the guiding principles under which we should be working. We, having brought on this year a new CEO, in the course of the months with the board, we have actively given over major responsibility to the CEO, not the board, for the running of this metro organization. And I think that is the most telling part that indicates that while we as Metro Board members are vested in understanding and wanting to be involved in what goes on in the organization, it is the role of the CEO and his employees to ensure that they will carry forward the work to be done by the board. I think looking forward, you will see the kind of work that we want to do in making sure that we're focusing on the policy direction, and that we will be working through the board to develop work plans, develop our calendars, set up our procedures, performance measurements with our CEO as a means of making sure that we are keeping tasks to that. I think the work that was done through the governance and the continued work that we do is involving our customers. We understand the two relationships we have with the Riders Advisory Council and the Access, but I think the work of reaching out to the community and being able to communicate with our customers and our major stakeholders such that we can really be engaged in understanding their expectations and reconveying the role that we will play here. This is a first step for us in beginning the strategic planning process. And one of the tools that we have talked about in using in this process is the Region Forward. So one portion of today is to talk about that Region Forward. It gives us an opportunity to talk about what role Metro will play in this region and how we are going to build upon the strengths that a transit organization in the region plays in not only its transportation role, but its economic development, its land use planning, and all those things that come together. I think the board has I think, been very clear that there are priorities not only within the organization under the new CEO, but I think the board. And that first step was made by setting forth the safety committee as a standing committee, and that committee working together to make sure. And I found it interesting, as we just finished the discussions that we had in safety, the purpose of focusing the board on the safety with the role of the executive. I think the adoption of our last budget and the work that we did in developing that budget also put us on the focus of making certain that the system is in a state of good repair. Mr. Downs just gave us a very good framework of how we should be doing that in talking about really putting the money where we really make our statement and say, if we're going to be invested in safety, we have to have a foundation on which we're going to build it on, and we have to have a commitment of being there. We've adopted a capital budget, and it's the largest capital budget that we've done in the organization since we began, and we intend to focus that on safety and ensure that we're meeting our responsibilities there. I talked earlier about the customer involvement, and I think through both the communications department and the role that we play, that's a very important role for us, that our customers and our stakeholders are important, and that we are accomplishing the kind of level of communication to engage people in a meaningful way of to what we are doing. I think the idea that really Metro is what drives our region today, and the number of people that depend on this every day. We carry over 1.2 or 1.3 million today, and that is a huge dependence upon the region on the work that we do. Staff has shared the number that 40% of the rush hour traffic is transit traffic. That's important, and that this is a huge investment of $40 million that is being offered around our region in transitory development as the underpinning of who we are. So as we look forward with Mr. Bodenheim's presentation, what we can do in making certain that we stay on that direction. With your board materials came a board work session and how we will move forward in this strategic planning. This will be our first opportunity to have, as this board, to think of a facilitated discussion about our strategic planning. And so today is the beginning of that, but you have with you a calendar that takes you through a series of sessions that we hope that we can come through and share as a board and adopt at the end of our year, our fiscal year, the kinds of goals, our mission, how we will do our budgeting, how we will do, how we will craft, how we will forward with our growth coming forward. And I won't go through that. I think staff, as we began this discussion, will give us an understanding of how we can best utilize that. I want to take the opportunity to introduce a facilitator today. Ms. Janelle Peterson is has made himself available to help us through this discussion starting today and going through the sessions that follows. Mr. Peterson is an executive advisor with Booz Allen, and he has 40 years of relevant work experience in this area of strategic planning and governance. He has previously served with the Los Angeles County Transit Commission and the executive director of the Seattle Metro, and so he brings great deals of transit experience, but also in the strategic planning. He's founded three companies, and he has worked on a highly acclaimed the Flex Car. Many of us in this region accompanying that with our role that we play in transit. So we appreciate the work that Mr. Peterson has done with us and moving forward with us. And I think we will look forward with us continuing the work that we've begun in talking about the strategic planning, but now actually putting it into place. And with that, I'd like to introduce Mr. Peterson, and he will start with us today on wrapping us up as to where we've started and helping us set some goals and directions of moving forward.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. It's a pleasure to be here. Can everybody hear me? Works out? Great. So if, with your indulgence, I'm assuming that what we're going to be doing here is more of a workshop as opposed to a committee meeting. So a few different ground rules. And if you could put up that first one, the ground rules that we've used in the past in these kind of workshops. Everybody see that? The basic thought here is it's brainstorming. We're not here to knock down ideas. We're here to get ideas. And the courteous candor, effective listening, that type of thing. And my favorite, of course, is the last one, which you all are so good at, which is no cell phones, no emails, right? Okay. And just to put a framework for what we're doing that builds on what Catherine just mentioned, if you could go to the next slide. What you all are embarking upon after the good work of the previous committees that you've been working on is developing essentially this pyramid with missions, visions, and what have you. And we're now, if you can move to the next slide. So if you just go back to the other one, the pyramid. Where is it? But But in developing this strategic plan, that then allows business plans to be developed, performance measures, and monitoring. And all the while, you've established very strongly that there has to be total transparency, number one. Number two, there has to be unbelievable stakeholder involvement. And number three, there has to be an adherence to values. And it's within that framework that we're having this discussion today. And the previous workshops, the first priority clearly has been, as the chairperson said, fix it now. I mean, we've got huge safety issue, and we've got a state of good repair issue that is the priority now and for the next 10 years. The purpose of this particular session, as outlined in the 12-month calendar you've got there prepared by Rich and his staff, is to focus not so much on that issue, although that's the most important, but on the second issue, okay, where are we going over the next 25, 30 years? And so Nat has a presentation prepared here, which really builds and is based upon the good work that's been done by Region Forward. You're all familiar with this effort that where the regional leaders came together and outlined a blueprint for where they're going. And the question is, before us today, if I can be so bold, is are we comfortable with that as Metro? Are you comfortable with that as being the blueprint? And then what is the role and how do we participate in that? So what we want to end up with today, and I'm throwing this out for discussion, please comment if you disagree with this, is we want to get a good presentation from Nat and see if we're comfortable in the end of saying, yes, this is the blueprint that we want to focus our efforts on in the next 25 or 30 years. And there's a huge number of issues associated with that. But, you know, is this the vision that we want to frame our actions on? Is everybody comfortable with that as an expectation for what we want to achieve today? So I think at this point, what we want to do is have Nat go through this. Now, I've already reviewed this one. This is meaty. These are 20 slides, but there's a lot of meat here. So the trick today is we only have 2 hours. The trick today is how are we going to be able to absorb all of this meat and all of the issues that he's going to raise and still have a meaningful discussion. So what the chairperson has advised Nat is keep it brief to begin with to allow more time for your all discussion.
Thank you. So the region's had a transport vision since 1998 at the Transportation Planning Board. It's only in the last year that the Region Forward document has been approved by the region, and it's really very timely from sort of the arc of the history of Metro, as well as the adoption of this document, that Metro adopt a strategic plan, a vision, that shows how we will support this document that really is this regional vision that really will show that really depends on a robust transit system. And there's a lot of symbolic importance, I think, to Metro being the first agency in the region to state clearly how we would implement that vision. Next slide. Whether we're talking about a city the size of Philadelphia or San Diego or Houston, there's going to be a lot of growth in the next 30 years. And this is both a challenge and an opportunity. I think there are a lot of regions around the country that would love to have this challenge. One key point I'd just like to make about this is you'll notice that the projection of population in the region, growth in the region, is less than employment growth. One of the reasons for that is that the regions are really not producing enough housing to accommodate all the workers who are needed to fill the jobs. And as a result, not only is there rapid growth in the suburbs, but there's also rapid growth outside of the region as well. And so doing an effective job of building a transit network in the core of the region actually gives us an opportunity to accommodate more of that growth to bring people closer to jobs and to strengthen economic growth in the region. So that is, it's challenge and opportunity. Next slide. This sort of gives an idea of where in the region growth is going. It is primarily going to the suburbs. It's primarily going to specific places in the suburbs. And the region has identified about 58 activity centers and 28 activity clusters where the vast majority of jobs is growing and a disproportionate amount of residential growth is going. A key point about this is that the Metro Rail system was originally built to support a very established suburb to center city home to work trip. The challenge with the dispersion of jobs in these activity centers for the future means that we're now going to have to increasingly be accommodating suburb to suburb trips or outbound city to suburb trips. And the challenge for us is, and all the transit providers in the region will be to serve those trip patterns.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure how we do this in this context, Neil, to get attention. So I use that as the tool. So the only caveat I would put on this, and I would put it because I'm part of the leadership group for the Region Forward Coalition, is that we actually do have a work group that's looking at this issue of, are these centers in the right places, and do we need to have more or fewer or defined? They're really, I think this, that calling them activity centers, which has been very focused on jobs and transit, and not on all the other things, it is going to change and morph into something that they're calling more like complete communities, which will look at housing, and it will, and I know you know this now, but I kind of want everybody else to know that there's a lot here that is going to have community discussion probably in the next 6 to 8 months about whether we've got this right, because this is the activity centers that you see on the map here is a holdover from a number of years ago. So, yeah.
Right.
It doesn't. So we have lots of opportunity, I think, as the transit provider, to help in that conversation about where we think it makes sense, based on road network, based on other kinds of things, to think about new ways of approaching. So that's just this isn't set in stone.
And that's exactly right. And we'll come back to a number of these points again and again. But are we going to be a leader, an implementer, an advocate, a custodian? Those are the roles that we should those are among the roles we can be thinking about. What should we be doing in each one of those roles? I'll just say that when the board adopts a plan, it officially, such as the bike plan earlier this year, it gives staff it's a force multiplier, and really in a way, because staff can then communicate that in all the situations that they find themselves in around the region, and it empowers the organization. So it's not only the location of these activity centers, it's also the pedestrian quality of it, how people will get to transit, and the mix of housing and jobs there. Next slide. So again, this slide is goes from the location in the region of where growth and development will be taking place to trip making. What kinds of trips will people be making, and what's the growth in those different types? So we've shown here these five principal types, the ones here, that we actually, you know, have a good, you know, really competitive basis to serve, our the traditional commute to the core, commuting to a central jurisdiction, something that's close in to the district, but not the district, the reverse commute, central circulation, which means within the center of the region, moving around, and then suburb to suburb. And you can see that probably 75% of all the growing, the new trips in the region are going to be in that suburb to suburb category. And that's going to be what's challenging for us to serve. Next. And the previous slide was talking about trips. This is really talking about travel demand, and this is just making a point about what the impact of this is going to be on the constrained road network. And I think everyone knows that congestion is forecast to grow and increase. The key challenge for us in this environment is going to be, A, extracting buses from congested lanes for the quality of service and also the cost of operation, and then also creating, as we just discussed, walkable places in the suburbs that will support transit use. Next. This is just a quick overview of how Metro is performing in the region, and Ms. Hudgens talked about this as well. A total of about 18% of all of the work trips in the region are served by transit, which is a very high share. 42% of the trips into the core are transit served, of which we support about 37%. And comparing to other, you know, very well served regions in the nation, you know, excluding New York, we're better than everybody.
Nat, could I just, when we benchmark here, which of the measures is the comparable? Is it the 37 or the 40?
Actually, that's a good question, Tom. The 42, it's the transit mode share.
The 42 is the comparable. Yeah, okay.
So, you know, New York's not America. So I just put this up here to, you know, make the point that we've been extremely successful in what we've done in the past, and so there's really no reason to rule out a similar level of success in the future as well as we're thinking about growth of transit in the region. There's actually one other point to make here. There was a group from San Francisco that came to visit us 2 years ago or so, and one of the things I learned from them is that of people who commute from the center city out to jobs in the suburbs, in the D.C. region, it's about 35 or 40% of those out commuters take transit. In San Francisco, it's below 10%. And the reason is there really are no employment centers around the BART stations that are accessible, whereas we have a number of them, and with the addition of Tyson's Corner, there'll be an even, you know, a larger concentration of jobs in the suburbs that people in the center can get out to. But that's a really, really interesting statistic, and it talks about the balance that we have in ridership right now and what we can achieve again in the future serving new kinds of trips. Next slide. Again, the changing role of Metrorail in this region, just some more points to talk about how it's evolving. It was built to serve suburb to center city work trips, but the fastest growing trip types have been in the PM, off-peak, on the weekend. Non-work trips have been growing. There's been an increased amount of walk and bike access to our stations. So how the region, how the system performs in the region is constantly evolving. Next. So this is a new finding from work we've been doing in a piece of work we're calling this Business Case for Transit. We took a really systematic view, and I should step back just for a second, transitioning now from that regional data to a couple of issues that we're going to face, key issues that we face as an agency. But I just wanted to provide this piece, this inflection point, just to keep in mind what it is that we're doing for the region. We provide a lot of value to the region. If Metro weren't here, there are costs that the region would incur. The modeling that we just did recently was we just totally took transit out of the regional travel demand model, and then we started adding lane miles back in so we could get to the level of road performance that we have today and ask the question, well, how much road would you have to restore in order to get that same level of performance? The answer is you'd have to have about 1,000 more lane miles in the region. It's equivalent to a second beltway. It's about 2.5 square miles of land that would be consumed for that, and you'd have about 1 million new automobile trips a day. And if you ask yourself, well, what's the standard reimbursement rate for a mile of travel, and apply a standard commute trip length and multiply that times, you know, 250 workdays a year, you actually end up getting to a number that's the same approximate number as the operating budget for transit in the region today. So the operating costs of moving people around just on that limited basis is roughly equal to what it costs to provide transit. In addition to which, if you put all this roadway down, you have to take away revenue-generating land uses. You have to disperse households. You have to put in parking garages and parking spaces. The national average is about 11 parking spaces per car. So there's a lot of additional land that has to be covered over with parking, and you have to take away revenue-generating employment uses, and again, dispersing them. So this is the kind of business case for transit kind of perspective that, you know, I think that all of us would do well to apply to questions about what transit does for the region and what a transit investment does. So a quick run through of the issues that we're facing, and many of them you've seen before. Right now we're funded to, you know, at 50% 8-car trains. We'll reach that capacity sometime in the 2020s, and even with all 8-car trains, we expect to reach the capacity of the system between 2030 and 2040 sometime. It's not only a line capacity issue, it's a station capacity issue. And the kinds of things that we're looking at to address that in future, new lines through the city, bus priority corridors, surface transit, creating new opportunities to run trains on to interline, to enable trains on the Orange Line, for example, to go through Arlington Cemetery and across the Yellow Line Bridge. But we're looking at lots of different ways to address that. Next issue. Sorry?
A suggestion.
Yep.
For clarity on that slide, even with 8-car trains, and you're talking about the forecast somewhere in the 20s, the issue of the core peak capacity, the question of when the system can forecast, given its trip forecasting, that we meet the core capacity of the system. You can't run trains through a system that can't service some of the stations. You can't. The core affects everything in this region if it is constrained, and I have not seen anything that we've tried to forecast about when we meet our core capacity. My guess is it's sooner than the 2020. At places like Gallery Place, Rich has said, it's now at some peak. Clarifying what that core capacity constraint is, when we hit it, and the ramifications of it seems to be part of trying to deal with our longer-term planning. And it would be better if we could establish some forecast targets and look at the implications of that for the entire rail system.
Okay, it sounds like a request for us to come back and talk about that.
I'm not expecting you to talk about it right now, on this particular issue about constrained core, it deals with the ultimate capacity of the entire system to function going forward. And we need to quantify when we hit that wall, because it looks like we're going to hit a wall here about constrained core capacity.
It's also very important, as people think about adding extensions to the system, that you need to have the robustness in the core to be able to accommodate those extensions. And so if you were talking about it, I'm talking about future extensions, I'm not referring to the plan system, just want to make the point that one may go hand in hand with the other, and we have to think about investing in the core of the system as part of thinking about expanding the rail system to serve activity centers. Moving on to the next slide. Again, another strategic issue for us is going to be, how do we get people to the stations in the suburbs? As we look at having another 100,000 riders during the peak period, if in the future, in 2030 and beyond, if we maintain the same mode share getting to the system that we have today, we'd need another 40,000 parking spaces. That in itself could cost up to $1 billion. So we need to think about how, strategically, about how people get to our stations, because if we use the precious space around our stations for these kinds of uses, we might not be able to support employment centers, might not be able to support housing or walk access. So, you know, in some stations it's going to be, that's going to be the appropriate mode of access, and others not, but it has to be thought about holistically. And again, this kind of will get into the, are we a leader and implementer, are we an advocate, are we a custodian role, because a lot of the decisions that are made about how people get to our stations are controlled by people outside of the walls of the agency, and we need to express views to them and prepare data to support decisions we think are in the interest of the agency.
All of my experience here has been that the authority does not ultimately accept any responsibility for access to the stations off of its property. The answer has always been, that's a jurisdiction issue. It's their streets, it's their sidewalk, it's their signal system, et cetera. The policy question ultimately is, do we have a visible stake in the performance of the last mile for our rail system? And if we do, what's our relationship to the jurisdictions who own, operate, and control that last mile? And it's not an issue that is clearly addressed here, but it is at the heart of accountability for performance for the last mile.
Yes.
I see the region forward as something
for us, and that is, rather it being metro or, it's metro and, because you, ironically, I went to the earlier page to note that we'll come back and say, what role are we expecting our partners to play? And the partners that have common responsibility, when it's the Commonwealth that comes to supposedly work with us in Metro, and the Commonwealth that governs our role as a local government, how do they make the right investments to make those work together? For example, that parking is an element to transportation, but will it be the dominant element, particularly when you want to invest in a core service? So the ability to provide the needed transit service at a local level, if it's not metro, then it goes lacking. And then it ceases to create communities. It simply creates transportation connectivity in the opposite way that we're developing. And so that those things really have to be at the core of the relationship that we're going to have with all of our partners, in saying the region forward is everybody is moving forward, not everybody is allowed to go their separate directions, but that we're really developing land use patterns that we need everybody to agree that these land use patterns will be supported and will provide the connectivity and those kinds of things. So that to me is, that last mile should have been decided when we made that land use plan around that last mile and how that connectivity was going to occur. And are we going to get those kinds of relationships going?
So just,
you know, if I could, I think Kathy's exactly right. I think where we are is we are engaged, as Nat said at the beginning, in taking that region forward and going deeper and being far more explicit about what the challenges are for that vision. And we need to do it in a way that involves all of our partners. You know, we're all sitting here around the table, right? And my experience as an elected official for 4 years working on county stuff as opposed to what I did before is that this is, most people view this as an incredibly complex area. They know the little bit they need to know, and that this whole set of information around the challenges that our transit system faces is not well known among our colleagues, the people who have, whether we're talking the business community, nonprofit community, elected leadership, whatever. So I view this work we're engaged in as teeing up these key issues and saying, if we as a region are committed, as all those towns and cities and counties signed on, then we got to grapple with this first. Because if this stuff doesn't work, all the rest of Region Forward really isn't possible. And so I think, you know, we're teeing it up. We're starting the process. But that's where we're going is, what's our regional vision? In the same way that they did all those years ago when they created this system in the beginning.
I think it's important as that conversation goes on to recognize we can't solve it alone.
Right.
They can't solve it alone. If we want to have it solved, we have to be at the table with flexibility to work on what needs to happen.
Well, but I'd also say that the authority has been reluctant to publicly engage about these issues because they are specifically presumed to be solely local jurisdiction issues. And it is simply not true. We own our customer long before they get to the station. For instance, while I appreciate the electronic bridge between Farragut West and Farragut North, the issue about putting more pedestrians in the walkway between those two stations, where it is impossible at rush hour in the morning to walk, anywhere near those stations, it is the highest pedestrian count of any place in the district. Without a conversation about the responsibility of VDOT to change the signals, to change the sidewalk configuration, and to change the crossing guards that control that, isn't the right way to assume an ownership issue like the pedestrian usage of the linkage between the stations. It's just an assumption that we've had for a long, long time that needs a real rethink about, and I agree 100% that it is a joint responsibility between the authority and the jurisdictions about how that mile performs. It's not enough that people can, we can't say if our customers get killed going to the station, it's not our job. And if we see safety or access issues, we need to be able to forcibly raise them, even if it is with Virginia DOT. And we're not there yet, and I think it needs to be a more explicit assumption of joint responsibility here.
But it's joint responsibility in that we have signed on to the same vision of regional development. Mm-hmm. So it's not, we have different goals. We have the same goal, but we have to recognize we all have to contribute our efforts and our thinking to achieve that goal.
But it's also beyond just land use.
Yeah.
It's the existing built environment about how people walk and bike and drive to stations. It is a change in priority of use in that magic mile around stations. And we don't articulate that very well, about the importance of that, not the land use side of it, which is more difficult, but the actual traffic behavior about how this environment
but
works.
All of that adds up to the quality of life in the region.
Yes, it
does.
For me, this is the most important aspect of the discussion and what we're doing. And when you think about the Region Forward, the reality is it will happen one way or the other. And whether the region embraces a plan, whether the region supports a plan, it is happening. And I think what this opportunity presents for us is to try to organize the dialogue around what are the implications of what we're responsible for what is happening and what will happen. And highlighting that if we don't, at least in terms of our own responsibility, manage the dialogue around it, elevate the issues, and identify what needs to be done to satisfy that regional vision, whatever it is, it can't happen. And to your point in the first slides, transit is at the core of the success of the region. And I think that what we're doing is just elevating our responsibility to raise the implications of those decisions, whatever they are, and to highlight how important we are to make sure that we're at the table in responding to it. Because the reality is, even on transit, we're partners de facto anyway, because they're funding the transit. I mean, it's not all rider pay. Our jurisdictions are paying for it, so we're linked either way, and we're contractually obligated to provide that transit throughout the system. So it's a great opportunity, and it's the best part of this whole process, what is elevating the dialogue, getting the strategy, and demonstrating that leadership.
Could I add another item? Just observations here. You know, this moving forward, region forward document is a living document. It's going to change. In fact, that we've already heard the suggestion that some of the activity centers need to be adjusted or added to it. But I think Mr. Downs raises a great point. Not only the expansion around the metro station of our involvement in this is important, but what really he was saying, in my view, was the operations, the actual day-to-day operations need to be integrated in this thinking, in this planning, not just the planning of it, not just the funding of the capital program, but the actual day-to-day operations, which is really the issue that he was really addressing when he talks about pedestrian movements and, say, the Farragut area, to certainly how vehicles, buses, other types of systems access our metro station. So the operations, those folks need to be actually involved in this, not just the planners and the capital folks, but the operations side.
Great discussion. Great discussion.
That have been raised, operational issues for us that we do try to articulate related to the last mile question are, if you have a large parking facility that's, the demand is greater than the supply, what you do is you get very, very high peaks in demand very early that cause crowding conditions throughout the system further in, and then it makes it difficult to get to the stations afterwards. You have some stations in the system that have very, very sharp peaks early in the morning. You have others that have much more, much broader shoulders across the morning peak period. Places like DuPont Circle, Woodley Park. It's just that people leave when they're able to leave because they have no question about whether they'll be actually able to get to the station. But if you're really worried about whether you can get to the station, you leave very early. You get there at 6:45 to make sure there's a parking space for you. So there is an operational issue for us in that way that we'd like to see broader shoulders, and we'd like people to be able to get to the station at 8:30 in the morning, if that's what their work schedule requires. And the other operational issue is that if you can't get someplace from the station once you get there on an outbound commute, you're not likely to take that outbound commute. And that's capacity we really want. Those are seats we really want to fill because it doesn't cost us anything extra to move that train. It's already running. If we can get a paid passenger in it, that'll increase the efficiency of our operations, and that is a really key strategic issue. Next slide. We could have exactly the same conversation about this point, which is really I alluded to earlier, with increasingly congested roads, with bus operations in the street, with 1% more traffic congestion every year. You could use 1% more buses every year just to provide the same service that you provide today. We've done an analysis of the 23 routes in our priority corridor network that carry half of our bus riders, that if you could increase the average speed of the buses by 3 miles an hour, you could save $30 to $40 million a year in operating costs. That would go straight to the bottom line, which is in this case subsidy. It's something that would make the quality of service better for our riders. It's something that would be a cost efficiency for the jurisdictions. It's something that the jurisdictions themselves control. And our ability to advocate on behalf of our strategic need to control the costs of growing costs of providing bus service is something that this is very, very analogous to the conversation we just had about articulating our needs to the region. Next slide. Again, we spoke earlier this year about the number of surface transit projects that are being advanced in the region. We're playing a coordinating role in a very technical sense, bringing together the project managers for the Columbia Pike project, for Purple Line, for the DC streetcars. We're just trying to make sure that these are as coordinated as possible, not only with one another, but with the bus service that we provide. Again, there's just sort of a point here about what role we should be providing and playing in the region. Should we be leading? Should we be an advocate? What kinds of transit should we provide in the future? Should it be any kind of transit? Should it just be high-capacity transit in a dedicated right-of-way or at least a prioritized right-of-way? What kind of services will we provide? Next. I think we've pretty much talked about this issue. It's going to be, there's more growth in the activity centers. It's going to be a challenge to serve it, and move on to the next slide. We've also referred to the operating costs and maintenance costs here. I guess the point I'd make about this is our constrained long-range plan has an assumption of a 2% annual rate of growth in the cost of providing transit to the region's funders. Whether it's business management's approach to this or operations approaches to this, I think there's a need for us to be able to deliver and to deliver the service in a way that's affordable to local jurisdictions. And, you know, pension costs are, you know, threaten that, healthcare costs, any variety of things that are key to us being able to provide the services that we do and keeping it affordable. And also being able to provide more growth in the future, because one point I would make about the CLRP is that that's a future cost that assume levels of service that we're really basically providing today. We're not increasing the number of rail cars. We're not increasing the number of buses or the amount of bus service. So there's clearly a fiscal component to this. And then also a
just a question about clarification about annual O&M costs projected to rise at a faster rate than ridership. On the M side of O&M, is that inclusive of the required state of good repair capital costs going forward? In effect, does it fund our capital depreciation account going forward, where we fell into a hole in the last decade, was not clearly articulating what the system requires in ongoing capital replacement? And does that forecast in O&M include what we think our long-term recapitalization costs are outside of system expansion?
Okay, I'm asked Tom Harrington, as director of the Office of Long-Range Planning, about the materials we submitted to the Transportation Planning Board for this. So.
In the CLRP, we've looked out to 2040. We did do forecasts in which we looked at life cycle replacement projections of O&M, as well as the capital funding needs. And I'm sorry if I didn't catch the first part of your question there.
Or is it just that it is the, does the M include the long-term recapitalization and replacement cost of the system in the out years?
Yes.
Does it?
Yes.
Yes. He said.
Not very specifically. You said O&M cost rises 2% faster.
I would. That's why I asked the question. I didn't think so either.
I know they're both there. I just don't think they're
okay.
The capital program component of it reflected the next 8 years or so at a fairly high level of funding. I think where we ran into issues when we were working with the jurisdictions on the CLRP was after 2020, uncertainty about the level of capital funding. And the resolution, the way it was handled with the TPB, was to say we're basically just funding basic maintenance and there's no capacity expansion beyond 2020. And so as a result, the forecasting that COG does, the TPB, still has a capacity cap after 2020, which reflects basically we can't go beyond where we are right now, I think.
Right. Is that?
Well, I think there was a little uncertainty. At the level of funding, we basically had a maintenance of where we were. I think you're right, though. If the capital funding dropped enough, we're looking at sort of backsliding a little bit. In other words, we're not replacing rail cars on schedule, we're not replacing buses. It would actually be a reduction in service.
We have to be forcefully explicit about what it requires going forward to recapitalize the system longer term, and it has to be built in as a set of assumptions that includes some dollar forecast that are inescapable. I don't think it is possible to say that it is negotiable in any way, shape, fashion, or form to envision a future here that does not recapitalize in a timely basis this operating system. I mean, it's not in the realm of possibility unless somebody wants to say we can start shrinking the system.
And I think this is at a time that we're talking about increasing the system in a different way than we, I think, have had a discussion today. If we think about the accessibility issue that we face, and we say that we are going to do proactive of bringing people into the system rather than subsidizing the paratransit system, that means that localities working with Metro need to make a greater investment so that not only the cost of the increase if we're successful, but we won't be successful unless we make the investments that are needed, the connectivity that's needed in order to make that transition. And it goes back to that point of the locality and the partners recognizing investments that we all have to make when we make the commitment to transit. That's the biggest piece that we have to understand, that there is an investment, but the return becomes increasingly immeasurable to us when we make it right. For example, you cannot have a stick in the mud and call it a bus stop if it's the connectivity for, you know, I have constituents who ride their wheelchairs in the street just because they're bold, but there only be two or three of those. But they could be captured in our transit system, and then that system grows in a different way than we've programmed. Very different than the way we've programmed, because we're talking about the economic development around places that is our growth, but we're talking about bringing in different types of users that should be part of this transit system holistically.
Morton and Al.
Yeah. And I think, picking up on what Tom said, we need to be very careful as we approach a strategic exercise not to compartmentalize it, to say it's only looking at expansion, it's only looking at growth, it's only looking at how. It's very important that Metro be part of that conversation, but we should never pass up the opportunity to say, by the way, we won't be here if we don't deal with the fundamentals of the system. It should always be on the table, and that really should be the basis of the discussion we have with them. You want us to be part of the tool for shaping the future, you've got to be supportive of what it takes to keep the system in a state of good repair. They're not separate issues.
No, I think those dialogues just now summarize what I was going to say, and that is that it's the safety and soundness of the system is our fundamental obligation. We that, as Tom highlighted, has got to be explicit in a highly visible way about what it takes to actually maintain and capitalize the system. But to the point that Nat made in one of his first slides, and that is jobs and economic development are key to the success of the economic development success of the region, and transit is key to the success of the regional economic performance. And if we're not recognizing, funding, and maintaining the transit system that will support the economic development of the region, then the whole process is flawed in terms of projecting and expecting continued growth and development of the region. And part of our mission needs to be to make sure that we elevate the dialogue around the link between successful, effective transit and successful economic development and the cost that goes along with it. It's, you know, we're doing our job to reduce cost, but there is a fundamental cost to build and run the system that we can't ignore.
I'd like to go back to find out a little bit more data about the long-range plan that you mentioned, Mr. Downs asked about. So in 2020, the current CLRP does not have a recapitalization of the system. And that's what you said, right?
More specifically, on the funding side, the issue really was the dedicated funding, the PREA funding currently. There was uncertainty about whether there would be both federal funding but also the local match. And in the adopted CLRP, the decision was to basically remove that funding after 2020 in terms of the outlook. And
but I think if that's the case, it's important to say we will have to remove the work, and the consequences will be a system that's going back into decay.
Can I just follow on more for a sec? So can you just give us a flavor of how that decision in about eight years from now, what was the counterpoint to taking that action in the long-range plan?
Well, we, in terms of our initial submittal, what Metro put forward was basically our capital needs inventory and saying, You know, we're playing catch-up right now in our capital program. We will reach sort of a steady state at some point where we're not playing so much catch-up, but we can actually replace things on a life cycle. So that was our submittal, was putting forward what we think we need to get back, get to that point, and then maintain. Now, when, you know, we're told remove $300 million and so forth, basically the first thing that came out was the capacity expansion. So there were significant costs related to going to...
So someone said take capacity out. Who's the someone?
Well, this is working through the Transportation Planning Board with the staff, and again, this being, you know, long-range planning, what we were really looking at was, you know, at a very high level, how do you translate that loss of potential funding into transportation forecasts in terms of what's available for service and what the impact it has on demand. The way that that's been implemented in the TPP model was by putting a cap on growth in transit ridership. How that affects the region is then the long-term forecasts show more auto use and then more impacts in terms of air quality and things like that. So that's how it's being handled at TPP, but at a very high level. I think there's some specific questions about exactly what it means for us, you know, in terms of that lower funding. I don't think we have all the answers at this point, exactly.
All right. So in 8 years, some jurisdiction, there was a jurisdictional decision in the long-run plan to take out capacity, and that's about 8 years away from now. And we don't have it, and we're not recapitalized as well as we should be.
Correct.
And thank you.
But may I just follow up on that point? Was the decision to reflect the uncertainty of federal funding? That, I think that's a more precise statement than saying that the jurisdiction decided to take out capital expansion. The jurisdiction wanted to make sure that modeling reflected the uncertainty of federal funding for Metro. But let me ask this question. Beyond the six-year CIP, you are reflecting the current jurisdictional commitment to capital funding? In the next 6 years, you mentioned that the jurisdictions have committed $800 million. Is that correct? To support state of good repair and safety measures in the capital plan.
In our current six-year CIP.
Okay. And so does the modeling through 2020 reflect a commitment of capital expenditure commitment from the jurisdictions at that same level?
That's correct.
Okay. And so the difference is the uncertainty that we experience every year about how much the federal government will invest. Okay, thanks.
Again, could we're beating this thing to death, I realize, but can I just get the clarification? After 2020, the jurisdictions did not affirmatively state that it was their intention to stop funding the capital program. If I'm understanding what you're saying, what I'm understanding you're saying is that after 2020, there was no commitment from our federal funding partner to continue the federal funding because that's the end of the current series of federal funding. Is the second way I said it more accurate than the first?
My own recollection was it was actually both the uncertainty of the federal funding but also uncertainty of the local match. I think it was those were equal factors in the decision.
Okay.
Yeah.
Of dedicated funding,
yeah.
You can't ever have a budget that tells you where you're going to go. You can promise and whatever. And that's really the discussion we're having here. And I think it's the role that we really have to play as you talk about what you said, Alvin, about if you really sit back and celebrate what Metro does in your economic development, then you have to pay up. You have to come up and say, if you're going to consistently follow that, you need to have a consistent funding source, because we all went through that dilemma of how do you say what it is. Well, it was driven by one thing, really. And it doesn't mean that the localities are not going to step up, but to what extent? One or all? And then how do you build that future? And I think in this discussion, if you talk about the growth, you have to talk about commitment. It isn't just the commitments of how we work together, but what we're going to bring to the table proactively
not with the with something over each of our heads, but we've acknowledged that this is truly a jewel for our region. And if you really love it that much, you have to play a role. And until we can get that one, that will always be the case, and it will be the next CLRP and the next CLRP without having the consistency that I think we've wanted to have in keeping the system up and the repair and maintaining it.
So what I hear you saying is that all the discussion is that partnership's not just a good idea, it's absolutely mandatory going forward.
That's exactly.
And if you think about it from both WMATA's point of view and the jurisdictions, it's in both of their economic, much less service, interest to do so. That's what I'm hearing here. And I'm hearing you say that that needs to be much more formalized and much more explicit than it has been in the past. Is that a fair summary of what you're saying?
I think a good capture.
Tom?
TPP has to focus on allocation of forecasted resources. It can't be that we agree that it is impolitic to talk about the capital and the recapitalization requirements of the system going forward. I think we have to have a public bright line that this system will require X amount to recapitalize the bus and rail system for safety, security, efficiency, productivity. That's the number. We're not in the business of trying to create the funding streams. Our respective jurisdictions, the state governments, the federal partners have to do that. Our job, I think, is to clearly and accountably state what it takes to make sure that the system never does what it did in the last decade, which is abandon its recapitalization. And we have to be annually renewing that forecast going forward. We can't mix the issues of the funding stream in the future with what we clearly state as our capital needs. That's my only point here, and you need to be really clear, and we need to be clear at the TPP and COG and every place else, that this system will consume capital at this rate for as far as the eye can see, and it just can't be impolitic to talk about it.
And that, if I could add something to that, I would say we do have the capacity, given Matt's little, even how many more lane miles we would need and the cost of that, we have the capacity to say, and if you fund here at this level, these are the consequences that we predict for the region. And they don't match up to this vision that Region Forward lays out of a thriving, economically, you know, connected, well-run place. So it's not that, I mean, I think we have to, it's like we're just turning everything a quarter of a turn and saying, you know, if this, then that, as opposed to, okay, well, we could suck it up or we'll go beg. Let's not talk about that. Let's talk about what happens to people and what happens to business and all of those things. Because the case for investment is tremendous. And that really is the last thing. I think we have to keep talking about this as investment in the region. This is not, oh, it's an expense. This is an investment. It's an ongoing investment in our vitality, our vibrancy, et cetera. And we need to adopt that language when we talk about what we're doing here.
Just one additional point too. I think it's an energizing discussion. There's a lot of passion around it, a lot of issues. I think that the real issue here is what's our obligation and our responsibility. And it's really less a, it's not a finger pointing process in terms of the jurisdictions. I think that if we, because we're all sitting here at the behest of jurisdictions. They've asked us to do this. They've asked us to lead the organization. They've asked us to create responsible policy practices and procedures and responsible management protocols and responsible fiduciary activities. They want us to do this. So it's really not so much that we are criticizing our jurisdictions. In fact, we're not at all. I mean, we're talking about what our obligation in the role of leading the transit system is to support the region's vision. And it's a collaborative process. It's one that will take a lot of work on our part to elevate that dialogue. But frankly, we've got to be in the position to demonstrate the information necessary, both in terms of the cost of the system, the cost of the recapitalization, the cost of daily maintenance, the cost of the labor supplies, and really accurately inform what it costs to run this system. And I think our jurisdictions are looking for us to do that as opposed to us pointing to them and saying, you're not doing your responsibility. Our job is first. Our job is to make sure that we have the data, have the strategy, have the dialogue that can inform them about what kind of long-term capitalization strategies need to be put in place to make the system work. And that's the collaborative part about it that is really here.
And when you think about it, you actually are uniquely positioned in terms of transit agency boards around the country to do what you're talking about, because you've represented or are here as representing the jurisdictions you're talking about partnering with. And in fact, the annual appropriation process, as bad as it is, makes that even closer. So many transit boards in this country are either directly elected or they're business people that have been appointed. There's not the connection with the jurisdictions that you have. So maybe what's been viewed as a negative in the past might be turned into a positive going forward in terms of making this partnership really work.
We always knew it
wasn't possible. Yeah, I have two other things to say. So to me, the summation of all of this is, how can we be a better advocate for what we need, and how do we as staff generate information that's useful for you? And what I'm hearing is that that we create value in lots of different areas, or we create efficiencies in lots of different areas, and we just need we need to do more analysis of the kind that we did with the lane miles and bring it home. How much would that require funding jurisdictions to pay for capital costs that are, you know, now you don't have to do them because you have a transit system? How much real estate value is created? How much economic growth potential do you have because you now have access to a workforce? How much increased household income is there in spending power? Is there in the region because you don't have to have a fourth car or a third car or a second car, or maybe even any car? And, you know, can you use that money to buy transit services or to support transit services or to, you know, shop and go out to clubs or invest in a new business, or whatever it is that people do with their money.
And don't forget the impacts on the environment and the air quality, too.
Right.
That's the other. If you put all those, what, million cars
right.
on the road, my goodness, what would happen to our air quality?
Right. Yeah, that's important, too. And then I guess the last point I would make just before we step away from the table is we have been talking about the long-term needs. A lot of your comments have centered around operations and business planning, which is a necessary partner to this, and you know, part of advocating for an improved system. We can have a great high-performing plan for expansion in the region, but I think we really need to connect with customers around the region, whether they're jurisdictions, whether they're riders, people who aren't riding the system today. Their impressions of us as an organization are really important to create the impression that asking for another dollar is, you know, is a dollar they want to spend on us, because there are a lot of other things that all of you around the table could spend your money on, whether it's public safety or parks or environment, economic development or affordable housing or any other competing use. We want to make the strongest possible case that that a dollar invested with us will be a dollar that generates returns in the region. And so that comes across all the dimensions that on a day-to-day basis, covered by a business plan kind of time period, would affect that, the quality of customer service, the performance, efficiency, accountability, all those things. And so there's definitely a link between the long-range planning work that we've been doing in planning, but also the way that we put together the shorter-range business planning and the strategic vision that you all put together should encompass both of those things, and they should be consistent with one another.
And I think that short-term look is the foundation on which the rest of it is built. We're really responsible for that, but if we can use a strategic process with the broader decision makers to make that point while we listen to their point, and the thought that the population of Philadelphia is going to move here over the next 30 years, and they're not bringing SEPTA or the roadways or the bridges with them, right? We've all got to deal with that, but they have to deal with the issue of the existing system. We can do the best we can to make it work efficiently, bring down the costs, run it safely, but it has to be part of the plan.
Yeah.
Matt, thanks for an excellent presentation. I wanted to turn to page 9, regional development growth and location projections. What I wanted to ask about and help me here is that projection says that the outer suburbs, first part is, what does that include? You answered the second question, it's not part of WMATA, but the number is a staggering. And I think the board needs to, we need some guidance here about how we deal with ex-urban development and growth and trips outside of our compact. I don't know where to start. I mean, the paper this morning had a whole bunch of census data that was revealing. But it gets into governance issue, Madam Chair, jurisdictions joining, not joining. There was a hearing I noticed in the paper in Prince William the other day, or coming up by Congressman Conley. But that number is really, you know, a big challenge, and I wanted Nat to maybe elaborate a little bit more about what you found, where is it at, what we should be thinking about, because that number's that's not sustainable. It's unbelievable.
Sorry. We're, you know, if we're at, you know, 4% of all regional trips today supported by transit, you know, even if we just want to keep pace with that in the future, that's tough, because we'd have to, you know, continue to capture those trips in those places. You know, if we want to establish a more aggressive goal of maybe having 5% of all trips in the region, you know, it's even more of a challenge. You know, we've started to do analysis of how successfully different investments attract ridership and make, you know, sort of make a dent in that. We've seen a lot of prospects in a regional rapid bus networks. Some of the things that we've been modeling are the bus rapid transit network that's been proposed in Montgomery County, the regional, you know, bus rapid transit networks in Northern Virginia. These things together, you know, can help us increase transit ridership in the suburbs quite a bit. Some of the line extensions, you know, will help with the radial transportation. They tend to attract people off of who are existing commuters into the region, into the downtown. They don't necessarily create a lot of new transit. Increasing the pedestrian quality in activity centers has a huge impact as well in creating transit ridership. So, I mean, the two, the biggest things that we see right now are creating really high-quality bus transit networks in suburbs combined with a high-quality pedestrian environment.
But, Ned, I'm asking about outside of the compact.
You're talking about outside that, the compact, even beyond the compact.
59% increase in outside the WMATA compact in population growth and a 43% increase in employment growth. That's the range of 59% population growth between last year and 2040. Even if it's half off, that's a lot. Where's the growth? I mean, is it Loudoun?
That's exactly right. I mean, it's Frederick County, Loudoun County. I think it's something like 9% of our trips on an average day are from outside of the compact area. So
that's going to go up.
That will grow up. Yeah, and I mean that's. I'm not sure. I don't think we have the answer to that question right now, but that does get to a question for us as an organization, which is, you know, what is going to be the limit of our transit planning? Should we be focusing on a narrow region and being really competitive within that region, or do we have a responsibility to think beyond and outside? Like, maybe we set a good example.
De facto policy that we're, WMATA is responsible for, non-jurisdictions, population, and trips.
Yep.
I think, you know, Tom's point's a good one, and one that we as a board need to make a decision about, because these folks are coming into our core. How they're getting there and how far they're going, it doesn't really matter. But there are end-of-the-line stations that these folks are coming to. There are decisions jurisdictions are making to favor parking over transit, as an example, and calling that transit. And what happens to them when they get to our core is important. And we've got to provide guidance to them as to what is necessary to sustain their commute to where they're going. And I don't think we're doing that. In fact, I know we're not, and we need to, because all of our other passengers that are in compact right now, within the compact area, still want to get to work. And so we are obligated to work with those other jurisdictions to try to figure out a way to sustain both their commutes, but also the jurisdictional folks who are paying the operating subsidies to keep our system running. And we have to do that. One technical question that I had on page 6, and it kind of relates to this, is you have a reverse commute number in there, and then there's a suburb-to-suburb number suggesting maybe that those are exclusive figures. And I'm just wondering, are they or aren't they? I mean, for example, you have folks in Fairfax County, an example that I know of, that commute to Loudoun County. That's a suburb-to-suburb figure, but it also happens to coincidentally be a reverse commute figure, while not on rail but on bus. So how do those two relate to each other, and are we seeing them going in a positive direction? Because if I read this, I look at suburb-to-suburb and think that means outer suburbs going into inner suburbs, and that's the 1,236,000 trips. And I'm not sure how many of those also might be in the 62,000.
Good question.
But I think it's an important question. But it's only accounted for in the suburb to suburb figure, or it's accounted for in both? Okay, because I think that's another thing that, you know, we need to get a better handle on. How much of that is happening, and are we putting transit services in the right place? And the only last thing I'll mention is, you know, we had the whole discussion about funding, and one of the elephants in the room, as I look at this, is there's a negative connotation on page 14 about local jurisdictions developing their own transit services, and a lot of that is because of the funding issue. It's more cost efficient for them to do that, or there's not available funding, or jurisdictions not willing to pay additional subsidies to support it as being a WMATA service. And so we need to come up with better ways to integrate them into our system, even if they're not our system. And it's not a negative that jurisdictions are providing these services. In a lot of cases, there would be no service if they weren't. And so we need to figure out a way to make sure they're talking to each other, working together. But I don't think it's a negative thing that local jurisdictions are stepping up to the transit plate. It's just a matter of how does that stepping up affect our core service and our existing service. And I think we need to do a little bit better job in working with those jurisdictions to figure that out, rather than suggesting somehow that it might not be a good thing that they're doing it. It's a great thing if we plug into it properly.
Neil?
Yes, ma'am.
Matt, on this reverse commute, would it be fair to say that this is what I call low-hanging fruit? This is the bus and the train that's empty going the opposite way. And okay, so I think that's the way for us to think about it. This is service we're already running, that if we could get people to ride the other way. So this is the service that costs us nothing, in essence. Okay. The second thing I would wonder about, and I don't know how we're going to kind of proceed through this, but I was looking at that this is round 7.2A of the cooperative forecast, and I think 8 is working its way through. And I also know that the folks at George Mason University have really been looking at what the impacts are of the economic climate we're in now, because 7.2A kind of predates the downturn. So I wonder for the board whether it might be worth it for us to ask John McLean or somebody from there to just come talk to us about what they're thinking is happening to these trends, again, just to inform us all, because all, you know, 40-year forecasts are 40-year forecasts. They're good closer in, and the further out you get, the worse. But I do think we're in this kind of unprecedented time about what, where people are going to be willing to invest and what our role might be in that. So I just offer that as a suggestion.
Can you put up the one slide on Region Forward? Bringing the discussion back to Region Forward for a second. I put this one slide together that basically summarizes the major recommendations they have on accessibility that affect us. And the one I've left off, which is the most important, was the first one was that you invest in your current infrastructure and maintain it. So forgive me that I didn't mention that. But the, if you think about, like the point you were just making, Mary, you think about this, this H&T cost, I don't know if you're familiar with this, which was developed out of the Center for Neighborhood Technology in Chicago. It's basically saying that an individual in today's society with the problems we have economically wants to, we want to keep their housing and transportation combined costs below 45% of their income. And, you know, your first thought is, what's that have to do with us? Well, it has a tremendous amount of, to do with us if we can find a way to encourage more development around our stations so that they can walk to Metro. They might be able to get rid of one of their cars or two of their cars. And that dramatically affects the amount of income they have. And with affordability, working with affordable housing and what have you, there's a way of piecing that together so that it deals with, you know, the economic realities of time. So just reviewing what the Region Forward called for, you know, dramatically encouraging housing and jobs in the regional activity centers and in the TOD, the transportation-oriented development objectives, depending upon whether it was residential, retail, or commercial. I may have those numbers off now. And then increased market share for walking, biking, and transit. Again, reemphasizes the development around the stations, which was one of the points you made early on in the meeting. And then the regional connectivity with transit access, and I'll come back to that in a minute. We talked about the accessibility and affordability, and then the minimum reliance on SOV. Obviously, people, it's not just a 4% share, but you want to increase that over time. So if you move to the next slide, when we talked about this previously, it spoke to some things. One was, even if you don't even think about rail expansion, you've got to, as was pointed out in an early part of the presentation, you've got to do something about the core capacity. And then in terms of the midterm, in the next 10, 15 years, even if you wanted to build more rail tomorrow, it's not going to happen in that period of time. You've got to think bus. And that also speaks to the question of the interconnectivity with the regional activity centers. And if you're thinking about bus, you've got to think about vehicles, you've got to think about bus garages, et cetera. And then the final point here is this sustainable financial plan. In your discussion, there were several things you mentioned that really have a way of reducing, probably the wrong word, but really honing their costs. I mean, for example, if a jurisdiction can improve the speed of buses in their jurisdiction, that has a direct, immediate cost impact on Metro. So there's a direct tie there. So at the same time you're going and asking for an appropriation for the jurisdiction, you're also saying, look, if you can do this, I don't need as much. So I think there's ways to work on this cost figure going forward. So these were things we talked about in previous workshops. I just wanted to bring them forward. If you could go back to the next slide. So I think we're at the stage in the discussion here of what else do we want to talk about Region Forward? In other words, are we comfortable, are you comfortable with this as a document guiding where we want to take this conversation when we go talk to our stakeholders over the next several months? Or do you want to go a different direction? Tom?
There's no other document for the region right now. But I would remember and remind everybody that COG does this every 10 to 12 years. They do a long-range strategic plan every 10 to 12 years. The actionable part of the regional planning process has traditionally been a decade. and I can think back at least 30 years, that every 10 years there is a new strategic plan that in the out years is entirely different than the previous one. Tying our horse to the long-term forecast is probably not the best use of all of our time and energy. If it's going to change again in a decade, having a 10-year strategic plan for this authority in the context of the data that is in the region forward, I think is a more manageable way for us to grapple with the issues of capital, operating, population growth and change, et cetera, and not focus on how we come to grips with what it looks like for us in 2040. Because I think the region will grapple with that again in another decade.
I think you're correct in terms of trying
to really focus on what is really part of our really direct responsibilities. But I think if we want to really shape what you've just noted is a flaw by continuously coming up with the new, but not keeping focus on a clear plan, I think we have an opportunity with the region forward. I agree. It's not new that we would do this, but I think it is new in that we've reached out more broadly than before in developing this, and maybe have the opportunity to have that relationship and conversation with our partners in a more meaningful way. And I think most importantly, that we can be a larger player in that. I think it's a good idea to try and manage the level at which we're going. But I think that means keeping the others in the game longer. I think to get everybody to buy into this was a milestone. The idea that somebody will step in and say something about your planning is a bit radical for us. I'm not sure what's going to happen when they say it right now, but I think it helps us think about what is it. I'm only thinking that if 20 years ago, when we were still enjoying what we had, that we could have thought ourselves 30 years further or 20 years further, would some of what we've created, and I take the activity center as an example, for those of us who live in what is defined as an activity center, well, it's my community. And the community reflects a different quality of life and thus a different amount of work and investment to maintain it. And so creating that as a long-term and trying to figure out who and how we keep it focused there, that we don't get lost again, might be, to me, the value of hanging our hat on this.
I'm not criticizing.
Yeah. No, it's not a criticism. Yeah.
Focus. It's just that if we think about the last decade, 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, there wasn't 9/11. There wasn't two wars. Mm-hmm. There wasn't the housing bubble. There wasn't the Great Recession. There weren't the bow wave of immigration if it's changing our communities. There was no way to forecast that a decade ago. I think the decade cycle in the long-term planning process is the realistic framework that most other regions try to grapple with. It is important to have the long-term context for it. It's also important for having a vision that is different, that you can talk about publicly when people like Phil Hazel proposes more highway bridges across the Potomac River as a way of dealing with the region's congestion and economic development, that we have a counter vision that can articulate that. But from a realistic strategic planning process for the authority, we haven't done strategic plans over a decade in this authority. Since I've known the authority, it has never had, other than building a 100-mile rail system, it's never had a vision much beyond the building of the rail system.
Well, and I'm going to respectfully disagree with
you. Okay, good. You know, it doesn't even have to be respectful.
Well, no, I'll do it respectfully, Tom. Isn't that one of my watchwords? No, I think we are in a moment that is like the vision of the 100-mile rail system. I think if we do not look beyond the 10 years and say, what are the big moves? What are the ways we need to think differently? We will never get there because we will always be focused on, well, you know, I got to solve this problem in these 3 years, and I can never get the momentum. And I'm reminded of how long changing the compact takes, right? How much work it is to get the federal government and our three jurisdictions to move together to do something that's great and important. And if we only have a 10-year horizon, I honestly don't believe it will happen. And to all the change that's happened in the last 10 years, you know, this Region Forward isn't built on a little vision for transit and a little vision for housing and a little vision about this. It's built on four big ideas: accessibility, sustainability, prosperity. I always forget the fourth one. Anyway, there's four big ideas. Those four big ideas are going to be the same four big ideas 15 years from now. This region will not work if those things do not happen. So my view is we can work short term and we can say this is what we can reach for, but we have to keep articulating and saying if our region's going to be the way it is, these other big things have to be part of how we think about funding, how we think about planning. We just can't be that short-sighted.
Thanks, Neil. I want to agree with both my friends, Mary and Tom. Because I think you're both absolutely right. Tom's right that, wasn't it Yogi Berra who said it's very difficult to make predictions, particularly if you're talking about the future? And so we don't know what's going to happen, you know, 15, 20 years from now. But Mary's right that we ought to be thinking long-term. I think we're already making some mistakes with the Dulles Line because we're not thinking long-term. That airport's going to be there another 100 years, and that station's going to be there another 100 years, and we've got to be thinking that way, not thinking that it's going to cost, you know, a little more to do it right now. In any event, we really should be thinking long term. Even though some of these projections about what's going to happen to the Washington region may be totally wrong, we have, you know, presidential candidates, very serious presidential candidates, saying Washington's going to be inconsequential in your life, and we're going to close down the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Education, the Department of Energy, and so maybe the region will shrink. Although I don't think so. But this exercise is extremely important and something that several have said today I strongly agree with, and that is that we ought to put some real numbers out there, some serious numbers about what it costs for the region to have the kind of transportation network that we all want it to have, so that our partners, so that everybody understands what it will take to provide the service for this region over the next 10 years and into the future beyond that.
I was also trying to agree with everybody, but let me just say that we are, and it's been touched on today, we will, by the investments that we make, therefore the jurisdictions make, really influence the future development. Because if you just talk plans and planes, Tom's absolutely right. 10 years from now, we'll have new plans, you know, based on what's happening. However, since we are a major influence of future development and shaping the region, if in the next few years we're trying to get the system back together again, that's really going to be our work for the next 10 years. If we lay out with the jurisdictions that this is where the investment should be for the following 10 years based on your pattern, well, then, by God, you may be actually implementing that plan that you laid out in this 10 years. Sure, there'll be changes, but you're laying down the concrete, you're laying down the tracks. And once you lay down the concrete, you lay down the tracks, that's where development's going to go. And if we don't do that, it's going to be the road system that will grow because of all local planning decisions. And you'll have the continued sprawl, which goes on, it's natural. And we will not have, the jurisdictions, the region will not have had the opportunity to influence that decision. So that's all I have to say.
Just a few points. I think this was a very good discussion. I think the slide that you showed us in terms of the three points, for instance, the core capacity that we're going to be facing bus service or more bus service over the future, I think there's an issue in terms of preparing this agency for a much different future. We've been primarily focused on rail with some bus, but I do think if you're trying to deal with more suburban to suburban trips, and we're going to be a major player in that, we need to prepare ourselves for that sort of future. If we want to even take advantage of reverse commute and the last mile question, we either have to provide a service, get private service, or one of the jurisdictions to provide service to those workplaces in a more effective manner. So it's really a issue of how we deal with the external world, but also how do we prepare ourselves for a perhaps a more significantly different future at this agency. So I think that's a good discussion to have. The other question I had, too, is we've talked a lot about a business case, I think. You put out the notion of what would the region look like without Metro. I think the question is, what would the region look like if you didn't reinvest in Metro? And that's a different question and a different set of data and analyses that you would have to construct. So I think we need to make a decision which case we want to put out. I think one is fairly abstract, but the other one is actually more relevant to our need to articulate the case to reinvest in the core system and what we have today, and then before you even consider expansion in the future. So I think that's a piece that we can offer up to the Region 4 leadership as part of the discussion. It's really, I think we need to think of what sort of product or what sort of information would be useful in terms of the discussion. I think that's one piece they probably don't have today. And I think if that's something we could produce in the next few months, I think that would lead to a healthier discussion.
Yeah, just going back to the last discussion about 10-year versus long-range plan, I think the bottom line is we have to do both. And I think we've been caught flat-footed in the last 10 years. Some examples were raised. I think of Dulles Rail. The point was made about, where was Metro's voice on operating and what was in the best use of the system early on. I think of BRAC, where jurisdictions were left scrambling, and the bottom line is a terrible decision was made that's awful for transit, and there was no statement from Metro about how this is against our long-range plan because we didn't really have one. We couldn't have predicted that was going to happen in a 10-year period of time. And so as activities like that come about in the region, we have to be able to point to how this doesn't fit in with a 10-year horizon, but also how it doesn't fit in with our long-range plan. And if we had those things to point to, I think we'd be a more influential voice at the table when some of these things come up, which may not be in the best interest of transit. It may not meet the four criteria that are in the Region Forward plan. And I think tying ourselves to that helps us when those instances come up to be able to raise the transit questions that a lot of times don't get asked when major things in the region like that happen. So I think you have to be really into both the 10-year plan so that you keep your eye on what needs to be happening today, but also the long-range plan, particularly when things happen that are beyond our control, but that we can point to and say, hey, you're doing something violently in disagreement with the region's long-term plan and WMATA's long-term vision. And I think you can only do that if you have both.
One of the questions we got asked, President, what kind of institutional change is going to have to happen here within this institution? Let me throw out a couple challenges. We're going to have to get into the housing business. We're going to have to get deeper into the development business. And I don't know how we're set up to do that. But you can't just, take the Region Forward thing and say, we're going to have more housing, as Neil had the screen up there. And if we don't know how that would work, then we're going to be caught. So I think there's some institutional questions of of Metro that we need to probably chew on here, not today, but eventually, that I just don't want to take for granted that we're all going to have the expertise and the knowledge within the board and within the staff to handle some of these new initiatives.
Well, and even stepping back from that a little bit, even if you partner with the jurisdictions that do have that institutional knowledge, you've got to have people on staff that can talk to them.
Neil, if I could, I'm sorry.
Just one question. I think that the dialogue is in the right place for me, and I think Jeff makes a strong point, and others have as well, that it's your dialogue. Nat talked about positioning WMATA to be a more effective advocate, and in addition to that, though, it's really our obligation to, as an agency, to really be able to elevate the dialogue and to talk about the implications of all the decisions that will impact our ability to run the system. And it's a 10-year, 40-year, I agree, we do have to do both. And I think what we are in a position uniquely to do is to be able to talk about both very concretely, because it's all a vision, but land use decisions are not a vision. Land use decisions create opportunity for ridership, traffic, residents. I mean, those aren't, they're painting a picture of reality that's already programmed. And when we see those kinds of decisions, we know the impact that'll have on our agency. And the flaw in the ointment in the past has been we haven't sat at the table and been able to talk about what the implications of those decisions are on transit and what it'll mean to the region. And that's really our obligation to do that, and not just to advocate, but it's our obligation to make sure that we are clearly articulating those issues in terms of the cost and the opportunity. I mean, it's not necessarily a negative. It's an opportunity to enhance the region, and that's what we've got to be able to do. We've got to have the information and the accuracy to be able to say it and say it with clarity and in a way that helps people make decisions, doesn't put people on the defensive, but it talks about what the opportunity is to have a transit system like this in the region.
Mary?
To add that I think in all of our strategic planning, we have to be strategic about the funding discussion. And I think it's more to it than saying this is how much it's going to cost for the Metro. I think that the board and staff need to help inform the discussion about how we go out to get consistent funding. And I think the business cases that we're all talking about building is important. And that in some ways speaks to the jurisdictions and the federal government. But I think it also has to speak to the taxpayers about why, when we go to them and say we need more money or we need to shift more of our money to Metro instead of to our local roads and alleys and trees and all of those things, that we need to be prepared to have that discussion. And I've been concerned that a lot of the discussions around Metro's transformation, including with the executives who are looking at the governance issue and will come and make some recommendations and possibly some amendments to the compact. And here that we talk about funding as if, okay, of course, we have to pay for Metro. Well, I think everybody agrees we have to pay for Metro. But beyond that, what are we going to do? Because these other transit authorities don't like that, you know, the federal government always just passes us $150 million. That's not going to improve over the next 10 years. That's going to become more competitive. So what is our strategy to make sure that we have the capital funding that we need? And from my own point of view, we do budget out 5 years, and our budget has to balance for 5 years. And so we need to be thinking about what the authority and the board can tell each jurisdiction about its needs and why. And if they are in the, Mr. Downs mentioned having unpolitic discussions, well, we have to be unpolitic. If, you know, maybe we all don't value transit in the same way. Maybe we all aren't willing to make the difficult choices in the same way. Maybe we need to all be serious about talking about how we're going to fund these in a sustainable way. And so I think that has to be a part of the discussion, unless we are willing to have all of this debate about a plan that doesn't have the money to get us there. And so that's what I just hope that we're willing to do.
Well, this is a good point to sort of, I think, summarize where I'm hearing you say today. One is, what this day has been about is telling the staff, basically, and I'm asking this, telling the staff, we're comfortable with you using Region Forward as a guidepost for how we want to proceed in the future, subject to the fact that we're going to develop a strategic plan. It's going to be a 3 to 5 year document. But from that, having to develop business plans and have to implement that strategic plan, it's going to be a 1 to 2 year document. Subject to a budget, it's going to be a 1 to 2 year document. Let me just review that briefly. So, what you've embarked upon here is for the next 12 months, you're going to develop a strategic plan. And it's going to take what we've just been discussing, if it's a framework for the looking future, as well as the stuff on Fix It Now and the safety and the initiatives for getting our house in order. There's going to be a strategic plan that comes out of that after you've had these discussions and then you've involved the stakeholders in a very meaningful, transparent way over a period of time. That's going to be a 3 or 5 year document. But what I think you've been doing today is you've been basically telling the staff, look, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is a document you can use as a framework for how you develop your work and come back to us with ideas on what should go in the strategic plan. Is that fair? Is that what I'm hearing? And then what I see happening at the next meeting, assuming that's a fair reflection of what you're saying here, what I see happening in the next meeting is you'll be saying, okay, now let's talk about what our role as Metro ought to be with our partners. We've had some discussion of that, but that's specifically a topic for the next meeting. Today was more of a discussion. Is Region Forward a good framework to provide a... developing out somewhere, he's got to have a framework that provides a guideline. You're basically saying, if I'm hearing you correctly, this provides a framework. It's not perfect. You're going to disagree with time to time. It's a framework to guide his and his actions. Is that fair?
Can I just clarify? The strategic plan is 5 to 10 years out, but that doesn't mean that we're going to leave it for 5 to 10 years and not touch it. You've got a 5 to 10 year plan that you can modify at various points along that process.
The strategic plan is actually shorter than that. It's 3 to 5 years and moving on, and it's constantly revised. You never stop this, and that's one of the decisions you've made, that this kind of discussion is going to go on continually.
And as I see it up there, and I certainly agree with this, it's also a strategic plan for what we will accomplish inside our own house, not just how we work with others, but where do we want the service to be, what level of service, what cost recovery, et cetera.
And it actually has a third layer, right? Yeah. So there's the strategically how we position in the region. There's what is the agency going to do? And then the third layer in the strategic plan is how are we going to conduct, we, the board, going to conduct our business in support of those goals? So we can't lose sight of that piece either.
Right. Transparency, value, right. Adherence,
right.
Stakeholder involvement goes throughout.
I mean, we still have work to do in terms of governance as a collective body. We've got a good beginning, but we're not done, and we're going to have to focus on those things in the next couple of years, continue to do that.
What I've heard today is, I mean, you've had a terrific discussion about some of the strategic issues facing you, which is just what you wanted to spend some time on. And I think it's been a very productive. Rich, do you feel from a staff standpoint you've got direction?
And the next meeting is focused on, what's the agenda?
Establishing our rules. Talking about.
So it's what I mentioned a few minutes ago. My understanding is the next meeting, October 13th, on this strategic stuff, is going to focus on, okay, what's our role? It's this partnership issue, and how are we proactive or not? Did we have a plan and did we present it or not? That type of thing going forward.
Is there read-ahead material that's going to be?
Is there read-ahead material?
You want homework, Tom?
Yeah, I want homework. I don't want to just sit down and have a kind of semi-unstructured set of discussions. We're going to spend 2 hours at it.
I hear you.
Is there a set of staff work papers that could?
I think after your question, there will be.
Okay.
I think we got a question.
I'd like to raise one issue, which is I know that the slides that Matt talked from went up on the web, but the what we have printed, his comments, which he truncated because we all prepared, did not go up on the web. And I actually think that there's a tremendous amount of information about some of these key issues that's in what's underneath those slides. So I'm not suggesting it has to go in that form, but I think you've done a really nice job of teeing up the key essential questions, and it's this arc of how do we bring the public with us that I think we're still kind of, it's to me it's not clear even when I look at the chart. I see this big hole in the middle, and I'm not sure how we are engaging which public. So maybe, Neil, that could be a part of what comes back in more specificity next time is, you know, we had talked about making sure that our funding partners in particular had some early conversation, but I know there are many people in the community who are very interested in these ideas and where we think we're going. So I just want to make sure that we're kind of building that path as we go, too.
So use part of the next meeting to discuss the public, the stakeholder involvement sessions for subsequent 3 months.
That would be fabulous, because I just think it gives people time to put it in their calendars and think about it, our advisory groups, or even if we want to take it back into our jurisdictions to transportation advisory groups that we might have, it gives us that capacity to kind of start planning around it.
May I just interject that? Just the communication tool.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting here with this. I think there's a very good opportunity to articulate in a very public way what we see going for the low importance of future growth and looking forward. So,
has WMATA, as the agency or the board, said formally to COG that we want to be an endorsee?
You never voted to endorse.
Well,
They are, but it is open.
But it is open. So I put that on the table as potentially that's something we ought to think about.
Well, that's next. That's the next meeting.
So we participated in the process, but, you know, we wouldn't have, as staff, without a board statement, would not have made that kind of endorsement.
Now, sometime in the next couple of rounds, I think we also need to focus on strategic issues that would affect the 10-year cycle.
Yes.
What is it we want to see in the way of performance standards? What is it we want to see in terms of improvement goals? What do we want to see in terms of policies with respect to state of good repair that really will inform what we have to do in a business plan and a budget? At the same time, we think about what we have to do vis-a-vis the region and the longer term.
Yes, Artis.
What are the observations?
You've been unbelievably quiet today.
I know. Actually, I've been looking at my notes from June, and that's my comment, that I think it's important for us to footnote the fact that the discussion today kind of affirms our initial conversations, notwithstanding the fact that it's a different team around the table. I think that's progress and development. So it affirms to me that we are in the right direction and we're on the right issues because we have different players, but essentially we reach the same kind of conclusions around the themes. I think that's an important note.
That's great. Rich, are you where you want to be? I think there's two people that deserve a lot of congratulations for that. First of all, I think the staff was phenomenal. Secondly, the fact that he kept it short, and then you all need to get a lot of congratulations for the participation. I mean, it was not a staff-dominated meeting. You really participated. That's wonderful. That's exactly what I wanted. So congratulations to all of you.
Thank you very much, Neil. We are adjourned.